Grisha, happy Friday. What's going on? What's with that new shirt?
Well, it is Friday, and yeah, I like my t-shirts, but this one, excuse the grammar. Okay, that's the only thing that's annoying because it's I'm a auditor, not I'm an auditor, and I'm a huge grammar freak. But it says to save time, just assume that I'm never wrong.
Fair enough. I think that's fine. Let me ask you a more important question. Did you get that shirt at a discount?
I did. I got a 5% coupon code. I had to discount it. You know,
Nice.
CPAs, we accountants, we love our discounting.
So, funny you mentioned that. Speaking of discounts, there's one discount that I personally don't love. Can you guess what it is?
Discounts on future payments.
Yes. Specifically, the ones relating to the long-term pledges receivable. What is that
Okay.
all about? What's going on?
Well, again, we CPAs love our time value of money, right? That's really what it boils down to. So when I'm looking at getting funds in the future, obviously what it's worth today is not what it's going to be worth in the future. It's going to be less. We're talking about inflation, we're talking about rising costs. So we want to put it on our books at net realizable value, and that net realizable value is ultimately what it might be worth. We are estimating what it might be worth in the future based on today. That's really
Okay.
what it's down to.
So conceptually that makes sense, I should say. It maybe makes it worse too, but let me put it this way. What in practice though, what's the timeline that we're referring to that the pledges receivable that would be subject to this fall under?
Yeah, so we're looking at long term. So anything that is past 1 year from your date of the statement of financial position. So if you're a 630 year end, and we're talking about 630/2024, if you're going to be receiving funds 7/1/2025 and beyond, that's really when we're going to be looking at wanting to see a discount rate apply to that particular pledge.
Okay. So tell me about the discount rate though. So that's always confused me. Is it the rate for the time period of the pledges at the time at the balance sheet, at the, I should say, statement of financial position date? What are we talking about?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people take different approaches, and this is one of those estimates that we talk about in the financial statements when we talk to our board members for our organizations. But that estimate goes back to a discount rate. A lot of organizations will use the risk-free rate. So they're going to the treasury yields, right? And when you think about that risk-free rate, obviously you're not going to use the 3-month risk-free rate on something that you're going to be receiving 5 years down the road. So when we look at that rationale for what that rate is that's being applied to those future payments that are coming in, we want to make sure it does make sense. There is wiggle room, as we like to call it. It is subjective, it is an estimate by management. So we just want to ensure that, again, at the end of the day, there's not going to be any material kind of difference based on what we presume it should be versus necessarily what management is assuming it is.
Okay. But what about the case where, like, let's say your pledge is receivable, the long-term portion comes in tranches, right? So like let's say one is 2 years from the balance from the statement of financial position date, another one is 3 years. Are you using different discount rates for those different tranches?
So on one particular pledge, no, right?
Okay.
So it's like if ABC Foundation is giving my organization money, I would ex and it's over 5 years of installments, the 4 years that are considered long term would all be utilizing the same discount rate. But obviously, when you look at the formula for the period that's being applied against it for the discount rate, it's going to change up what that discount is on each of those installments. However, when we talk about different discount rates, and Yev, this is actually one of the things that I commonly see being done incorrectly, is that each different pledge that you're getting should have its own discount rate that's applied. Meaning that, if you get something in your 630 year end in July, the discount rate that you apply to something that you may receive in May of the following year might be different because the timing's a little bit different. Additionally, that discount rate, once you've set it against that particular pledge, does not change. So, a lot of times I will also see my organization saying last year the rate against ABC Foundation's pledges were 1.5%. And this year, well, inflation. So now I have to put 3%. Well, you've already applied that estimate. It should remain the same moving forward.
Okay, so in other words, you don't adjust the discount rate every year, despite the fact, even if the underlying risk factors haven't changed surrounding the pledge, but a year has elapsed. That hasn't your period changed? And
Your
thus, like, your
period
discount.
has
Oh, sorry.
changed, but the actual rate itself will not change, right?
I see.
So
Okay.
they'll change the actual rate. Yes, of course, you're collecting those payments and the discount on that payment gets amortized into your contribution revenue, but the rate for which you're applying, what I'm talking about is I do see some organizations who will make it 1.5%, and then next year they'll change it to 3% versus just amortizing the discount that's been collected.
I see. Okay, got it. And what about, so presentation-wise, is this shown net? Like, are your long-term pledges receivable now shown net of the discount, or do you have to break it out separately?
Yeah, so I mean, it's all in what you want to show on the face of the statement. Some people will put it all as one number and then put a little disclosure that says, comma, net of discount of X amount, right? But that gets a little commingled and boggled down, I think, sometimes on some financial statements. There is a disclosure that is required within the footnotes to the financial statements because you're wi required to disclose what you're receiving in 1 to 5 years, and then thereafter. And then you would also show what your discount rate is. You're also required to disclose the discount rate ranges within those pledges as well that is being applied against those pledges. So those are things that we'll see in the footnote, which is why I typically, from a presentation, it's a preference, of course, but I like to see just pledges receivable, comma, net, and then your number, and then your footnote will give you all of the details that's required.
Right. Well, that was going to be my next question is financial statement footnote disclosure required for this discount? It sounds like it is, and by virtue of that, you're almost inevitably going to get more information in the footnote anyways.
That's correct. Yeah.
Got it. Okay, so then the most important question that I typically end these kind of calls with is, so how much room do we have for weaseling out of this standard? Meaning, like, how do we apply materiality if there is even potential for applying?
I mean, sure, of course, there's always materiality when it comes to financial statements that are being audited, that are being reviewed, but that's ultimately going to be up to the scrutiny of your auditor. So, my personal opinion is always to err on the side of caution for those types of things, and go ahead and create that schedule. Go ahead and get your discount. Now, of course, if we're talking about something that is maybe $100,000 over the course of 5 years, likely that discount rate is going to be very small and likely immaterial. Not always the case, though. I do want to caveat that it depends on every organization and kind of what we're looking at, what the auditors are using as their benchmarks for materiality. But that is a conversation that you can kind of have uphand and say, hey, can you kind of give me a gauge or a range of what we're looking at so that you can determine if it's worth your administrative burden, for lack of better words, to create that schedule and do the discounting.
Well, and to your point about the administrative burden, I think, at least from what I've found, it's a fairly straightforward and oftentimes quick Excel exercise. So it really, in practice, once you kind of do the analysis of your discount rate, you're really just applying the formula, and it fairly quickly spits out the discounted value, and the difference between the original non-discounted and the discounted value is the discount.
Yeah, I mean, Excel's present value formula is very easy. A lot of my organizations don't struggle with this in terms of what they have on their books because it's only a couple of pledges, but I do have some organizations that have many. And that can become a little for lack of better terms, kind of difficult because you're tracking multiple different pledges, you're tracking multiple different types of installments in years, and you're tracking multiple different discount rates, right? So it can get a little tricky from time to time. The other thing that I also want to mention is just to keep in mind that those long-term pledges are also considered to have an implication of time restriction. So when we're looking at those revenues, we should also see those on the with donor restriction schedule as being at least time restricted, if not also purpose restricted.
Interesting. So, in other words, then that's a very good point. Anything, almost anything that has a discount and that you're applying that discount to has to be time restricted by definition because of the discount, because of it being long term, right?
Because there's an implication of it being utilized in
Yes.
that year
Correct.
for that installment. Yes.
Got it. Got it. Okay. So, then in closing, I mean, anything else that you can think of? Like, in your experience, you mentioned the whole thing about having a different discount for each pledge, long-term pledge, I should say. and what you just mentioned about the kind of an implication of time restriction. Anything else that, like, in your experience, you see is a common mistake?
I think there is also some scrutiny over if an organization receives the cash for that long-term portion, then that's when the time restriction kind of disappears. But what about a case where they don't receive the cash and maybe the organization has pushed off giving you the cash, but they still have the pledge there? They've already still said that they're going to give it to you. Does that time restriction then go away? So in the back of
Interesting.
my head, we're looking at cash receipts as being the ultimate end of when that restriction is gone. In my mind, really, if you're looking at those pledges, again, that revenue was quote unquote given, not revenue, I should not call it revenue, that contribution was given for that specific period. So if that period has elapsed, even if you haven't received the cash, it kind of goes away. Right? You've satisfied that restriction. You've satisfied that timing. Now, again, I do want to emphasize that if it's also purpose restricted, then you have to satisfy the purpose as well. And if you don't have those expenditures, then you're obviously not satisfying both. So keep it in mind, both do have to be satisfied. But again, when we go back to the standards, that time restriction has elapsed and can therefore be released, even if the cash hasn't been received.
Okay. Interesting. All right. I think that's all I can think of. I mean, I think this is pretty clear. I certainly learned a lot. I think it's a little bit more involved than on the surface it seems, but I think unlike kind of our previous discussion with CISO, it's probably not nearly as involved as CISO as far as like a true assessment of the business conditions, both internal and external. It's more, I would say, it's specific to just the long-term receivables.
Yeah, I mean, it's anything that's considered long term, right? Like, even when we think about our new lease standard and those future minimum cash payments that are required on our operating leases, we're doing the same thing. We're discounting future payments back. It's the same concept.
That's true. It's just, you're right. I mean, it's kind of been carved out specifically on, let's say, a subset of the statement of financial position, in this case, the pledge of receivable, but you're applying that concept, the underlying concept of time out value of money, to a lot of
Right.
other line items on your financials, basically.
Correct.
Yeah, but that's
Yep.
true.
And that doesn't alleviate an allowance either. So I want to keep that in mind too. You still have to evaluate for a potential allowance for uncollectibility on top of that discount.
Well, interesting. Does that take us back to CISO, or is that now a completely different standard?
CECL is a different standard. It does not apply to contribution specifically. That's only
Yeah,
on
that's true.
exchange transactions, right? So.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you as always for explaining it clearly. I always learn a lot from you.
You're welcome. Ask the auditor.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and if you're wrong, just kind of assume you're right, right?
Exactly.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you, Trisha.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Bye.
No worries. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the GRF On the Go podcast. Visit our website at grfcpa.com for more information about the services we provide, the industries we serve, or to request a quote.